Coming up on the next Fan Up podcast, all the games happening on Sunday. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Here we go.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Welcome to the real Thanksgiving Day edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I know I said it was that yesterday, but really it's the Thanksgiving Day edition today because today is Thanksgiving. And I am joined by the same three super fans that I was joined by yesterday. Oh my goodness, you might think we recorded the show at the exact same time. Yes, we did. So anyway, let me introduce the three super fans that I have joining me here today. I've got our Texan super fan, James. Hello, James.
Howdy, Jay. Have yourself a very good Thanksgiving and a very bloodless Black Friday.
Yes, Black Friday is probably more important than Thanksgiving at this point. Pat is our Patriots super fan. Hello, Pat.
Hey, guys. It's all about Cyber Monday. It's the 21st century.
Good point. Who needs Black Friday when you can just stay at home and do all your shopping online? And maybe you can use the money you win by wagering at betdsi.com. Maybe. Look at that. I'm all about cheap plugs. And Monty, our Raiders super fan, you're not late this time.
Hola, senores. Hola. Lot to be thankful for this year.
Yeah, see, James already did the Spanish joke in yesterday's show, so... You are late with the joke. But in any case, we want to hear from you, nextfanup@gmail.com. And we did get an email this week, and I will address it when we get to the Green Bay Packers game. So thank you, Josh, who is our resident emailer. We'll be talking about that. We also want you to tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can check out all of our previews and work that we have in the written word on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. Usually we like to go in order of the games as they're presented on Pigskin Pick'em on ESPN.com. By the way, if you're following our Pigskin Pick'em group, and why wouldn't you be? Justin, our Seattle superfan, has taken a 3-game lead since Dizio 69-1, have had a bad week last week, and has fallen to second place. The one guy who's really fallen out of contention, though, actually the two guys who are on the show that have fallen out of contention are you, Monty, and you, James. Monty, what's happened with your picks lately?
I don't know. I think I'm starting to go a little bit with my heart now that it's real that the Raiders are good, so I'm picking the teams that I want to win, and it hasn't been working out that way for me.
James, you have any excuses?
Well, just trying to pick on the going a little counterculture on some of these 50-50 games, trying to make up some space, and it works on some, and other times it just widens the gap.
You know, the disappointing part about this week is that I don't have the power rankings from Greg, so I don't know how the power rankings are going to go. They had a pretty decent week last week with 11 correct picks. The power rankings are in a firm tie for 9th place in the Pigskin Pick'em group. You can still join our group if you want to, especially if you've been playing all year. Just go to ESPN.com, the Pigskin Pick'em game, search for the Next Fan Up group, and play along. It's a lot of fun. So this is a game that I think you're going to have a lot of interest in, Monty. It is the Sunday night game. It's the Kansas City Chiefs at the Denver Broncos. And here is Nick and Louie.
It's now time to talk about what I think is one of two Kansas City-Denver games over this next month that I believe are going to define this this division and possibly the conference. I am your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick. I'm joined here across the table, metaphorically speaking, by our Denver superfan, Lewis. And we're going to battle here. I think this is going to be a really interesting game, one that's going to say a lot about both of these teams. I think they're fairly evenly matched. And I have a lot of worries, to be honest, on my side going in. I have a feeling Lewis does too. But first off, I just want to bring up the injuries. I think those are going to be key for the Chiefs. They've been missing Macklin for a couple of weeks with a groin. D. Ford, the league sack leader, he went down early in the game yesterday. We're recording this on Monday. So we don't know what his availability is going to be like, or Macklin's, or Marcus Peters, who has been out over the last game with a hip pointer. Hopefully he's getting that back. I know they intentionally wanted to rest him yesterday, hoping that he'd be back for Denver. I think he's going to be very important. And we have a number of other guys that have been banged up. It's not the best time for us to be going on the road to Denver, particularly against a Denver team that's coming off the bye. But I'm going to toss it over to you, Lewis. First off, just how healthy are you guys, and what's your just overall level of confidence in this game?
I mean, like you said, the Chiefs are coming off a game yesterday against Tampa Bay, and they lost a couple of guys. D. Ford, like you said, got injured yesterday. Peters and Macklin weren't able to play. So I think Kansas City is more hurt than Denver. Denver's actually just came off a bye, hopefully getting most of their guys back to lead practice today, Dark Wolf practice today. So we should be at full strength on defense. But I still have a lot of concerns. Our offense is not in a good place. Our running game hasn't been productive in weeks. Trevor's still hurt. His shoulder's still hurt. I don't know the effects of it or how it's going to be during the game on Sunday. But I hope we were able to figure out something with our offensive line. I think we're going to bench Donald Stevenson, which you said was a pretty bad signing, and now I have to agree. We're going to bench him for probably Tyson Brillo. I don't know how that's going to work. It hasn't worked out in the past. I don't see why it would work out right now. But I'm just concerned about how this Denver offense is going to attack this Chiefs defense. Even though they're a little hurt, Justin Houston should get some more reps this week as opposed to last week. I assume he didn't play a full amount of snaps. And like you said, they rested Peters for this game specifically, so I expect him to play. D. Ford, I really have no say, but I'm just concerned about how this Denver offense will attack the Chiefs defense.
I will say that the defense has been quite a surprise for me. I had a feeling going into this season that they were going to really have some holes there, and they're going to be getting exposed in the empty spot vacated by Sean Smith. But as we've seen, their young guys have really stepped up, and you know, the absence of Justin Houston has not been nearly as big of an issue as we thought it was going to be. D. Ford, as we've mentioned a couple of times here, he's stepped up. I don't know if he's going to play. I hope he does, because if we can have Justin Houston, you know, with a higher snap count, back with you know, a little bit more of that rust knocked off, and D. Ford and Holly, suddenly this is back to being an actual, a really potent edge rush rotation, and it could be the best that we've had so far this year. Again, if Ford is healthy, so I mean, if this defense is fully loaded, I'm feeling a lot better about this game, particularly because, well, I haven't been a huge Simeon fan. He's impressed me. He's had some good throws. Granted, they've been probably designed things to Thomas, but I'm just looking at their stats. I mean, actually, Alex Smith and Trevor Siemian are somewhat similar in a lot of ways. I mean, they've had roughly the same yardage. You know, Smith has been a bit more efficient, as you'd expect, in terms of completion percentage. But Smith is 9 touchdowns, 4 interceptions now. Siemian is 12 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. And I don't know. I just feel like both of these offenses are going to struggle to get things going against each other's defense. And the Chiefs really need to step it up on offense better than they have the last few weeks. Although Smith came away with a decent stat line this past weekend against Tampa Bay, his interception in the end zone was just horrible. It's exactly the sort of play that a Smith-led offense cannot make. And they just have been horrible on third downs, and that does not bode well with Von Miller screaming off the edge in these games. I expect Travis Kelce is going to have himself a good game. Who knows if Macklin's going to be in there. But this is going to be a real, it's going to be a white-knuckle, I think, defensive battle there in Denver.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Trevor, I think, hasn't been the same since the Cincy game. I still think they rushed him a little bit too early. They panicked because they couldn't get the job done with Paxton.
and I think his shoulder's really hurt. But like you said, the stats are a little misleading. I don't think he's playing like a quarterback who has 12 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. There are a lot of throws that should have been picked off 90 to 99% of the time, which the defense just dropped. But yeah, this Denver offense, I think one of the keys to this game is being able is going to be field position, but Denver has to be able to convert some third downs and be able to drive down the field. I think Denver leads the league in 3-and-outs, so it's important to just keep the offense on the field, play field position battle, and it's going to be tough to get some turnovers against this Kansas City led offense. Like you said, Alex Smith is a conservative quarterback. He's not that gunslinger type of guy, but I think whoever wins the turnover margin and field position is going to be very, very key for this game.
And I think the other thing that's worth noting, although I've been, everything I've said so far has been fairly pessimistic about the Chiefs, it sort of reminds me of the same moment that we had earlier in the season, coming off of just an absolute drubbing by the Steelers, and then going on the road to Oakland in a game they knew they really needed to win to sort of set themselves up well in this division and get going. And they played their best game of the season in Oakland against a good Raiders team. And I feel it's sort of similar here, where they just had, just a really bad game, a game they should not have lost at home. And now, hopefully, they're going to be getting a little bit healthier and going into a division game where the Chiefs have played well in the division. And so I'm feeling good about the game. However, I do feel like, that extra week of rest for Denver and the knowledge that this is an incredibly important game for their season, that worries me. I have a feeling you guys are going to come in focused because you've already dropped a couple of division games. Playing us at home has got to be one of those ones where you feel like if you're going to win this division, you got to beat us. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I think this team's going to come out prepared. I think they're going to be prepared, ready to play. It's just a matter about execution. I think they'll be able to figure out the right game plan, the right way to attack Kansas City. I'm not really nervous about the game plan. I think Gary Kubiak's one of the best coaches in the league, and he'll figure out a way on a bye to exploit this Chiefs defense and exploit the Chiefs offense. It's just a matter of our offense and defense executing. But yeah, it's a good point what you said. I think the loss to Kansas City just wakes them up. They're in like this 5-game winning streak, beating teams. I mean, sometimes losses at the right time aren't necessarily the worst things. And if you could lose to a non-division opponent, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. So I think the Chiefs will be ready, and I think Denver is going to be ready. It's just a matter of finding the right game plan and executing it, and that's going to be the deciding factor.
All right. Well, I'm going to toss it to you first for your prediction. What do you think happens here? What's the score?
I kind of agree with you. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think the Chiefs and Raiders are playing better than the Broncos, but I think this week off is going to help Denver. I think playing at home is going to help Denver. They're behind in the win column or tied. We'll see after tonight's game. But I think Denver is going to somehow pull it out. I think it's going to be a very low-scoring game. I think it's going to be 20-17 Denver.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same thing I was thinking. And while, this game going either way wouldn't shock me, as you can probably tell, as the Chiefs super fan, I gotta believe in our boys on this one. And so I'm going to say 2017 Chiefs. I think a lot of it's going to come down to the health of both squads, but also, it's going to be, whether or not the running game can get going for both of these guys. I think the Chiefs have gotten steadily better against the run. And so, yeah, it's going to be one to watch. It's going to be a great Sunday night football. I'm glad they flexed it. And I'm looking forward even more to the coming rematch on Christmas Day in Arrowhead. Either way, two holiday treats, and I'm looking forward to it.
Nick, it should be a good one.
All right. Well, I'm not going to give you a good luck, but nonetheless, hope we both come out of this one healthy.
Sounds fair.
Cheers.
Another great breakdown by our super fans. So not a lot of need to really go in depth on this one. I've been going back and forth on this one. The Chiefs are my boyfriends. The Broncos are at home coming off a bye. This is a tough one, James.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Broncos. The Chiefs are dead to me after killing my survivor pool last week. So, Gonna go with the Broncos.
Pat, this is another one. This is one that's of interest to us as well, as you know, these teams are going to be in battle for that number one seed in the playoffs.
Yeah, these just, oh man, even more than the Patriots, these don't feel like number one teams. In terms of the pick, I'll go with Denver, but I mean, who knows?
Denver has won 7 of the past 8, although that one that they lost was last year, in November, as a matter of fact. The Chiefs won 29-13 at Denver. This could be an interesting one. Cairo Santos converted 5 field goals in that game, Monty.
This game should be awesome. I don't know who came up with the flex scheduling, but thank you. That was a great move on your part. I got a cheer for Von Miller and Justin Houston pretty much to tee off on both teams' quarterbacks. But between me and you, I'm just Trevor Siemian's not that good, and I think the Chiefs are going to win this game. I don't think Andy Reid's squad is going to come out and lay an egg 2 weeks in a row. Go Chiefs.
I mean, I think perhaps last week was a little bit of looking ahead to this game. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I do like, I think the Chiefs can pull this one off, which would pretty much knock the Broncos out of that first seed conversation. I mean, they wouldn't be mathematically eliminated, but it's going to be tough going for them. Would a tie benefit you at all, Monty?
Yeah, James actually did a statistical breakdown, assuming that the Raiders won in Mexico. A tie would be fantastic, like a 3-3 tie with both quarterbacks getting a little banged up and, you know, questionable for next week. That's probably the best case scenario. So that's what I'm looking for.
All right. So there you go. We started with the Sunday night game. Let's go all the way back to the 1 o'clock games.
We have some late breaking news. The power rankings have Kansas City in 4th and Denver in 6th. So using the arbitrary 3 spots for home field advantage, Denver is picked by the power rankings.
Oh my. The power rankings been released that I should know about? Should I go and open that document up?
Well, it appears a couple people have put some in already for this week, so we'll call it updated. And you know, the power ranking update, much like Andy Reid's 2-minute offense, just takes a little bit longer than 2 minutes to get going.
Interesting. All right. I'm looking at the power ranking sheet, and I do not see this week's. Anyway, I'll trust your judgment, and if you want to give me an update on the power rankings as we go along, that would be fantastic. In the meantime, why don't we listen to this recording I did with our Atlanta Falcons superfan talking about the Cardinals and the Falcons. All right, so we don't have Dr. Jones for the Arizona Cardinals, which is a shame because I'm really a little bit more interested in the Cardinals side of the story than the Falcons side of the story. But it's always a good podcast when we can get Tim on the show. And Tim is our Falcon superfan. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Jay. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So this is a game where I think it's obviously important for both teams. The Cardinals here trying to fight to stay relevant in the NFC, although I think last week's loss might have been the death nail for them. And you guys are still, you start off strong and then you go on that roller coaster, and that inconsistency, I think, is ultimately what's going to kill you in the end. So can you guys, you know, pardon the pun here, stay up and fly straight for the rest of the season?
Well, as far as the rest of the season, you know, I'm not sure. But for this week, I feel pretty confident. And the reason I'm going to feel the most confident in this week is if you look at the past 5 years for the Falcons, we're 5-0 coming off the bye. So, you know, I mean, that's what every team aspires to be, but it's not the case for most. We're playing against an Arizona team that's not the Arizona team that anyone expected or that anyone's seen in a long time. So I feel like this is a good week for us to get things back in order. We have health back on our side. You know, Tevin Coleman's expected to play. Desmond Trufant's expected to play. Both have been in practice. And I mean, we missed Trufant terribly against the Eagles. And Coleman, I mean, we've missed him a lot. So, you know, as much as I love Devontae Freeman, He just can't carry the load by himself. So it should be a good game. And I mean, the Falcons are favored by, I want to say, 4 points the last time I saw. So and we're at home, even though that doesn't really mean much in the Georgia Dome. So there will probably be just as many Cardinals fans as Falcons fans. But nevertheless, our players get to sleep in their own bed, so that may help.
We were talking right before we started about the injury report for the Falcons and how Jacob Tammy was one of my saviors on one of my teams. And then I just realized he's been put on injury reserve, which doesn't do me any good. But he was having a good year there for you. I mean, is there a, you guys have another tight end behind him that will make any noise?
We have two. So we have Levine Toilolo, who was drafted a couple years ago. And it's probably most famous for his scene on Hard Knocks where he's playing the ukulele with all the boys out by the pool. And it was just like, it's a really creepy scene because they're all just like jamming and they're like really feeling Levine. It's like, you'd expect it if he was like surrounded by a bunch of girls, but like, it was like that same vibe where they're just like chilling. It's like, which one of these guys is like Levine Toilolo going to lay down tonight from dropping the jams on the ukulele? And no disrespect, like, I'm all about that. If that makes you guys happy, then go for it. But it felt really weird. So we've got him. And we've got the rookie Austin Hooper, also out of Stanford. And I feel like Hooper is going to be the way to go. And hey, guys, I drafted Hooper in the third round in our mock draft. Falcons ended up taking Hooper in the third round in the mock draft. So, I feel pretty great about that. And I like the kid. I mean, he's not as great in pass block right now. He's still got, some work to do there. But if you can get him one-on-one with a linebacker, he's going to clown that linebacker. So it's just about getting the right matchup and getting him available and open to catch the ball. Whereas Tammy was good at finding a soft spot in the zone. And a lot of that's from, his time playing with Peyton Manning. Like, he understands that, sometimes things break down and you got to, get a little bit more creative. And, the rookies and the younger guys don't know that yet.
So we all know the power of this team, your team, is Matt Ryan to Julio Jones. But I think what opens things up for that combo to work is your running game. And really, it's the two-headed monster of Freeman and Tevin Coleman that makes it work. Coleman, questionable. Is he due back?
We're expecting Coleman to be back. He's been in practice. And I mean, truth be told, he's been in practice for the past couple weeks, but like, he's just now cleared for contact. And the thing that's so good about Tevin Coleman is he's incredibly fast. And this year, he's done a lot to get better in the passing game. So, whereas before it's like Matt Ryan would throw him the ball and it would just hit him in the hands like his hands were bricks. This year, I don't know what he did over the offseason, but he's catching almost everything coming his way. And it's making him like really, really, really good. And I mean, we were talking fantasy a couple minutes ago. In my work fantasy football league, I drafted Devontae Freeman in the first round. And then like the eighth, I drafted Tevin Coleman just in case Freeman got hurt. For a good stretch there, I was just starting both of them as my running backs and I was winning every game. So, when you have that kind of capability from your offense where it doesn't matter who's on the field, Matt Ryan can find them and get them, it makes a big difference. And, since Coleman's been out, Matt Ryan's been, focusing a lot more on Julio, which, gives him, puts him back in those bad positions. Like, we saw, a couple weeks ago against the Eagles, Matt Ryan had a Matt Ryan style interception because he kept targeting Julio over and over and over and over. And you can't do that because in professional football, they're going to key on him eventually. And then they're just kind of have somebody sit and spy and just pick it off. So
were the 15 points against Philly the least amount you scored all season?
I think so. Yeah, it was bad. Mm-hmm. And I mean, more than anything, it was Chris Chester, our right guard. If we do not draft a guard in the first round, I may quit my post as the representative of the Falcons, because I don't know if, like, there's only so much you could deal with, like watching a man making $20+ million a year and having to know that like all of your faith is in him when he just keeps getting pounded. Like it's been a problem for years.
And all right.
I don't know.
So defensively, what do you expect to see out of your team?
I expect to see Desmond Trufant following Larry Fitzgerald all game. And then, Alford will cover a side. And, I like the other corners, like Jaylen Collins. He hits like a safety. His coverage ability is kind of weak right now. But the way he's been hitting people as the ball's getting to them, like, that's helping him a lot. And Brian Poole, our undrafted rookie free agent out of Florida. I know Dan Quinn recruited him when he was the defensive coordinator at Florida, so he ended up bringing him over to the Falcons. Like, he's been surprisingly really, really good. So, like, I feel pretty good about the secondary. I hate Ricardo Allen, our free safety. I want him to be replaced in the draft. But, I mean, Keanu Neal, like, I know me and Patrick got into an argument in our Slack group about whether or not he could be defensive rookie of the year. And he was like, well, the numbers aren't there from sacks and interceptions. But, and we're talking about a guy who's leading our team in tackles. He's filling a hole that we've had for years. And he's caused four forced fumbles, and he missed the first two games of the year due to injury. So, I mean, we're talking, like, he's a thumper back there. And, I mean, he's our Cam Chancellor light, essentially, is what we brought him in to be. And he's setting the tone. And, I mean, quietly, Vic Beasley's, like, third in the league in sacks right now. So, you know, the defense is coming along. It's just whether or not they can keep it going all game and not just have these stupid little lapses where, like, for one drive, they just don't show up. And then the other team scores in, like, 2 minutes. And we're like, what just happened? So, yeah.
So on the other side of the ball, Bruce Arians was back in the hospital this week. I say that, so I shouldn't say it so cavalierly, but he is out and he appears to be fine. He had some chest pains, which led to a scare. He was hospitalized overnight, but he was back at the team facility on Tuesday. He's expected to lead practice on Wednesday. Yeah, I know you guys are hearing this on Thursday or Friday. We're recording this on Wednesday. And he should be on the sideline for Sunday. I'm wondering if, you know, because this is the second time this season, the first time was during the preseason that he headed to the hospital. I'm wondering if there might be a few distractions there that are holding the Cardinals back this season. I mean, honestly, I don't know what it is about the Cardinals. They seem to have improved, at least on paper, on defense. Although Tyrann Mathieu has missed a couple of games, he's still questionable on the injury report. You know, I expected more of the Cardinals than what they're currently showing. And I said when I opened this that I think their loss last week might have been the death nail. I mean, if they lose this week to the Falcons, they're definitely out of it. I don't see any way they get into the playoffs if they lose this week.
No, I would agree. And I mean, I would probably say the same about the Falcons. If the Falcons lose this week, I don't see us winning our division. So we have one game up on Tampa Bay. Hmm. We still have to play the Chiefs. We still have to play New Orleans again. We still have to play Carolina again. I mean, those are two teams that are turning it around. Like, New Orleans is just like, all right, Drew Brees, do what you want to do. And he's throwing for like 9,000 yards per game and just doing whatever he wants. And Carolina's surprising people and getting good again. So, and we talked about, it was the first thing you said to me when we started this. Are the Falcons just going to, you know, come out to a big start and then crumble? Like, we're notorious for doing that. So I feel like if we lose this, we go down to 6-5, Tampa Bay wins, and now we have the same record. Who's to say that Tampa Bay doesn't run away with it?
Well, let's look at what Tampa Bay has for a finale schedule before we crown them the winners of the NFC South. Tampa Bay has Seattle this week, so I don't think you need to worry about them winning. Although Seattle is one of those heckle and jive teams, and I said that on purpose, that will do that sort of thing. Then they're at San Diego. They still have New Orleans again. At Dallas, at New Orleans. So they got New Orleans twice still, and then end the season with Carolina. Tampa Bay is not taking this division, my friend. They've got the exact same problems that you just highlighted for the Falcons.
You know, I'm always the most paranoid super fan. I'm like the only one that doesn't constantly drink the Kool-Aid on their team, other than like maybe the Brown super fan. But I feel like he's like, he's got to lay in the bed that he's made at this point. Like, I don't even understand how he exists. So I don't know, dude. I love the Falcons, but I hate the Falcons, so I worry.
You'll be fine. Sorry that we didn't give you more on the Cardinals, folks. Unfortunately, Dr. Jones has gone MIA. Maybe he's off searching for a crystal skull or something like that.
You went straight for the worst one.
Of course I did. Well, plus, it's the most recent one. It's the one that I would expect most millennials to have seen. I don't know how many millennials have actually gone back and watched the awesomeness that was Indiana Jones in the early days.
I mean, I have.
Well, I also don't know if I consider you a millennial. How old are you?
I'm 29.
Yeah, you're a millennial.
Yeah, I'm like right in that millennial wheelhouse.
All right. Well, you know, go out and protest an election or something like that.
Oh, been there, done that, homeboy. Been there, done that.
What's your prediction on this game? I've got the Falcons. I don't think you have anything to worry about in this particular game. I think the Cardinals are done.
I've got the Falcons as well. I will say, 28-24?
Really? That low?
Man, I don't see us blowing this team out. Like, I feel like there's something stupid going to happen. And, like, the Cardinals have a really, really good running back, so they could eat a bunch of time of possession. So, you know, if we don't win the time of possession battle, then, I mean, especially with Tevin Coleman being back, like, I expect us, when we score, we're going to score fast.
It's the second highest over-under for the week, according to BetDSI.com. The only other one was the Redskins-Cowboys at 51. You guys are at an over-under 50.
I mean, so, that would put us at, what, 52?
Yeah. So you still have the over.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough. Tim, always a pleasure.
Jay, have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
There goes Tim. It's always a podcast when you have Tim on the show. As you heard, I have declared the Cardinals dead. They're at least dead to me. I don't think the Cardinals clearly not the team I expected to see this year. And I don't believe they are going to pull off a victory in this one. And thus, I think their chances for a playoff berth are out the window. James?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Atlanta Falcons. You know, Bruce Arians relies on the deep ball, and you know, Arizona has not been able to convert those passes. It's as if age caught up with Carson Palmer. If only there was some historical precedent of a quarterback falling off the cliff at the end of his career.
Patrick.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys just said.
And Monty.
Soft spot for Carson Palmer, but I think he's done, and I don't think they have anyone waiting in the wings to take over. It could be a while for the Cardinals to kind of get it back together.
The Jacksonville...
They're one Tony Romo away, Monty. Just one Tony Romo away.
That does seem to be the place where... Well, I was about to... That does seem to be the place where the older Cowboys end up going. They end up moving to Arizona.
That's for older people in
older
general.
Older everybody moves to Arizona.
Or they move to Florida, where we have the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are coming north to face the Buffalo Bills. This is the time of year when you want to be looking at weather. I don't think there's any particular bad weather in store this coming weekend, but the Jaguars are in Buffalo. It's going to be chilly, that's for sure. Blake Bortles listed as questionable. I don't see TJ Yeldon on the injury report that I am looking at, and I believe he should be on it. Sammy Watkins, by the way, going to be back at practice today. And I'm curious if that's just so that they have him for the end of the season, because he was on the injured reserve. If you didn't practice by today, you cannot play for the rest of the season. So that's my guess. I don't know if Sammy Watkins will actually be active this week. But I don't know if Sammy Watkins will make a difference in this game, Patrick. I think Buffalo should have no problem beating the Jaguars at home.
Yeah, I agree. If anything, I imagine it would be a tune-up game, get him in there for a few series to work out any kinks and have, you know, some contact. But he can't be a significant part of the offensive game plan.
Monty, who you got?
I don't even think this game will be close. Buffalo's going to run it right down their throat. I imagine there's people on the Jacksonville team that have never even seen a snowflake.
And James.
I'm going to take Buffalo and the power rankings as well.
Let's see here. BetDSI has this as a 7.5-point game for the Bills, and I agree with all of that. I'm going the Bills. I'm going to take them with the large spread, which is... That will be something that we'll talk about as we move along here. The Titans are at the Chicago Bears. And this is another one where, I mean, I didn't believe in the Titans early on, but they certainly seem to be on the upswing, Monty.
Yeah, there seems to be a trend of teams investing in an offensive line and then being able to protect their quarterback and run the ball. Go figure. Who would have thought, right? So the Cowboys have had success. The Raiders went through free agency, and I think that the Titans have got themselves a pretty solid offensive line as well.
Jay Cutler is out, and that means there's a backup playing for Chicago.
I don't think Barkley.
Yeah, I don't think there's a chance here for Chicago. Do you, James?
No, I'm going to go with the Titans. They've progressed nicely throughout the season. I'm glad we played them earlier in the season, back when they were trying to figure out that offensive line and how exactly exotic Smash Mouth was going to work.
And Patrick.
Yeah, it's if Oakland and Tennessee have done a good job addressing their offensive line and building from the inside out, Chicago's done the exact opposite, and that's why they're looking at their third quarterback right now, not their backup.
All righty. The next game on the docket is the Cincinnati Bengals at the Baltimore Ravens. Now, the Bengals, let's spend a little bit of time here. AJ Green is out. Giovanni Bernard tore his ACL, so he's done for the season. The Ravens seem to be defying all odds and remain in contention for that AFC North title. But I am going to declare the Bengals as one of the few teams that are done. They are D-O-N-E. I'm going to take the Ravens here, James.
Well, I mean, that is a bold call, calling a team that is 3-6-1 done. I mean, you come out here for the, you come to this show for bold calls, and, saying somebody three games under 500 with six to play is done. That's right up there, man.
Well, the Ravens are on the top of the division. They're only 5-5.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, resident expert in divisions that will probably have an 8-8 team representing them. Baltimore Ravens, they're going to start hitting a tougher stretch of their schedule. So obviously you can't take those five wins away from them. I still think they're going to do just enough to stay on top of the Steelers by the end of the season. And that will include winning this game today Sunday.
Patrick, I don't know why I was going to the next game. I still got two more super fans to go through.
I mean, it's fine if you want to skip to the next game, because this one is just, we have a mediocre team facing one that is imploding. And yeah, you're going to see a 5-5 team that looks like reasonably competent beat one that is just beat up.
Monty?
Yeah, the Ravens defense surprised me way better than I thought they were going into the season. And without Gio and AJ Green, I think they easily take care of business at home versus the Bengals. The Ravens get this one easily.
I think I saw a stat that AJ Green accounted for 1/3 of the Bengals offense out of Andy Dalton. So yeah, that's a big hole to be filled by Brandon LaFell down again.
You don't want to start the narrative that Andy Dalton is actually better without having an all-world wide receiver on his team. We could be the first ones to jump on that.
No. Let's see here. The next game on the list is a mediocre team against, I don't know what you would call the Browns, because it's certainly not mediocre and it's certainly not bad. It's just horrible and deplorable that they're even allowed to compete in the NFL. The Giants are my lock of the week. The spread is only 7, which I think is low. I don't understand why the Giants aren't getting more respect for this game, other than the fact that they are mediocre. But I like the Giants here, and it shouldn't be close. Pat?
I agree. The mediocre team is going to beat up on the inept team that can't seem to get out of its own way. You can buy tickets to this throttling for $11. If that's not a if that's not a sign of bad faith, I don't know what is.
Monty?
Not a shock, but a bit of a throwback. With the first pick in the NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns will be losing this week, I'm sure, very, very handily for the Giants.
And screwing up that first-round pick, to be sure. James?
Yeah, the Cleveland Browns had a job fair that fans could pay either $65 or $105, and they were going to bring in people from the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball to try and get try and get you in the door, do some job interviews. And the reason the cost was so high is it came with a ticket to the Cleveland Browns game. So, yeah, there was that. Cleveland's going to lose.
The next game on the list here is the Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis visiting the New Orleans Saints. And this game has a little bit more interest to it. So let's spend a little bit more time breaking this one down, because I don't believe in the Rams, and Jared Goff obviously didn't show us a lot last week, but I'm not necessarily buying in the Saints either, Monty. See, Monty's Sorry. Speechless. He doesn't even know what to make of that.
Mute on. buying into the Saints or not, I think you got to buy into Drew Brees. And so watching that Rams defense versus Drew Brees should be, you know, that should be a good matchup. I think that rookie wide receiver, is it Mike Thomas for the Saints, playing well? Brandon Cooks is, you know, super fast. It'll be fun to watch. But at the end of the day, what has Jeff Fisher ever done that would cause anyone to believe? They defensive coordinators seem to have gotten enough tape on Todd Gurley and realized if you put 11 people in the box, Jared Goff and Case Keenum probably aren't going to beat you. At least 50% of the time they won't. I think the Saints are going to win this, and I'm even going to call the old, as a Raiders fan, West Coast team flying into the Eastern Seaboard. I don't think that the Rams are going to show up today.
Oh, my God. Geography is certainly not our forte here. And I don't have either of my geography experts in Neil or Greg, but New Orleans is not on the East Coast, my friend. It's like smack dab in the middle of the South.
It's got to have the time zone, though, the two-hour time zone.
Yeah, central time zone.
I'm not giving you a pass on that. New Orleans is not on the East Coast. I will tell you, you mentioned we were very down on Jeff Fisher, but against this particular opponent, Jeff Fisher is 5-0. He's never lost to the Saints, James.
Well, I mean, all good things must come to an end, except for Jeff Fisher's tenure as a coach. I will say West Coast team traveling to the Gulf Coast and imply that, you know, that's almost like traveling to the East Coast.
But it's not even the East Coast of the Gulf Coast.
No, it's not. So how about this? They are traveling to the They're going to travel to the east bank of the Mississippi River, which when they played in St. Louis, they were on the west bank of the Mississippi River, just further upstream. It does not matter. They still have to go in an eastward direction, and they still are going to lose.
Patrick.
Yeah, I watched Gleason this week, so now I feel like rooting for the Saints. And I always root against Jeff Fisher because, I mean, he's just terrible. Now he has a rookie quarterback playing. Like as soon as he put his rookie quarterback in, that's a signal that they're giving up on the season.
I unfortunately still believe that somehow the Rams are going to make this game closer than we all expect it to be. And it's going to come down to Drew Brees in the end. It's a 7-point spread, according to betdsi.com. I'm going to take the Saints and I'm going to take that spread, but I do think it's going to come down to the end of the fourth quarter, and the Saints will pull out the victory. But I do think this is going to be closer than people might think. The 49ers are here. Here you go, Monty. The 49ers are a West Coast team going all the way to the East Coast, visiting the Miami Dolphins, and the kickoff is at 1 o'clock. I don't think, as much as I'm down on the Dolphins, I'm much further down on the San Francisco 49ers. And I don't think Colin Kaepernick will look as good as the Patriots made him look last week.
I'm with you. I don't think that the Dolphins, what are they, 6-4 right now?
They are. A surprising 6-4.
They don't feel like a 6-4 team. I don't think Jay Ajayi is going to sneak up on anyone anymore, but just the 49ers haven't given you any reason to believe that they are capable of doing anything. They need wide receivers. I don't know. Carlos Hyde must have gotten hurt there for a few weeks because he's kind of disappeared. I think it's a long road ahead for the 49ers, and it looks like this week it's the Dolphins' turn in the rotation to kind of get an easier win.
Pat, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this is like a homecoming game. Like J.J. is going to have like 30 touches and 200 yards, and you know it'll be stat padding time. Like they'll look decent because Tannehill won't have to throw the football.
James?
Yeah, that was the exact same thing I was going to say. It's shocking how much better the Dolphins do when Tannehill touches the ball less. Both the power rankings, which I've been neglecting to inform us on, and myself are going to take Miami.
You know, the Dolphins, I mentioned, sort of quietly have reached the 6-4 mark. They've won their last 5 in a row. That's Pittsburgh, Buffalo, the Jets, at San Diego, and at the Rams. It's quite an interesting stretch here for the Miami Dolphins. And if they win this, they're now 7-4. And now we have to actually talk about them being a playoff contender, or at least a contender for the playoffs. I don't know if I can say playoff contender, which I think says a lot about the state of the NFL right now. I left it out there for someone to pick up the ball, but nobody decided to go run with it.
You can only be so excited about the Dolphins and Niners pod.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the next game then. And that is the San Diego Chargers at the Houston Texans. I happen to have a Texans fan here on the show with me. So, James, I give you the floor.
Well, all I know is they either have to raise the Energy Stadium where the Houston Texans play to approximately 7,000 feet above sea level, or maybe bring in some of those Mexican fans, obviously on legal work visas, to shine the laser in Brock's face. I'm thinking that laser was actually a sign from Bill O'Brien that he has the green light to throw to DeAndre Hopkins. It did not pan out that way necessarily in Mexico City, but he had a pretty good showing. The Chargers they've been up and down. I think they're more victims of playing in the AFC West than anything else. You know, at a 4-6 clip, and with really good running back Melvin Gordon, at least second year running back Melvin Gordon coming to town, I'm a little worried that San Diego will be able to run all over the Houston Texans, as a lot of teams outside of the Oakland Raiders have been able to do this year and last. Coming in, I know our Jadeveon Clowney has stepped up and taken over for J.J. Watt this year in a very admirable role. I was thinking that he might be a Pro Bowler going into last week, and now he should probably make it into the Pro Bowl. And then A.J. Bouye, he got dinged up against Oakland. I believe he's going to be a full go against the San Diego Chargers, and so that'll be very beneficial. Houston managed to actually score points up in Mexico City. They got up to 20, which is still well below league average, but above theirs, so that's a step in the right direction. I'm thinking it's going to be another close game, which is always unfortunate with Phillip Rivers and the San Diego Chargers and their propensity for winning late games. But I think in the end, Houston will come out on top. We'll say 24-17.
The last time these two teams played in Texas, Phillip Rivers passed for 295 yards, 4 touchdowns, 4 catches, 2 touchdowns, 111 yards were to wide receiver Seyi Ajiro-Tutu. Hope I said that right.
The future Hall of Famer, I believe.
Yes, but that was back in 2010, and this just in, I don't think Ajiro-Tutu is still in the league. I could be wrong. The last time these two teams actually played was in 2013, and Texans kicker Randy Bullock converted a 41-yard field goal as time expired. This just in, Randy Bullock also no longer in the league. He's a free agent. Neither of those irrelevant stats matter in this one, Pat.
Well, yes. The most relevant thing that I think was said was that James suggested bringing Mexicans to Texas, giving them jobs, free football tickets, and lasers. Like, this is how Trump wins.
I specified they needed a legal work permit, sir.
Oh, problem solved then.
Oh, my. I'm not going to make the same love Trump's hate comment I made on yesterday's show. But in any case, who do you got in this one, Pat?
I don't know, Texans. I love the Texans. I love Romeo Crennel and Bill O'Brien. So, like, I like to pick them because I don't have any money on it.
Monty.
I think Romeo Crennel, I mean, that was the best defense that I've watched the Raiders play all year. The problem is Brock Osweiler. Laser shining in his eyes or not, when he gets pressured, he seems to throw the ball right into the defender, and the Raiders dropped an interception. They got another one. I think that Melvin Gordon out of the backfield is going to be a bigger problem for the Texans than the Raiders fullback who busted the 70-yard touchdown catch out of the backfield. And it seems like this time of year, these divisions have a way of tightening up, and I think the Chargers are going to go into Houston and win this one.
Interesting.
Monty, as Gruden will point out on that fullback play, you just cannot defend, what is it, the Spider 2 wide banana?
Especially with, 5'2 speed coming out of the backfield.
Oh, boy. All right. The line from BetDSI.com has the Chargers as 2-point favorites. I like the home dog in the Houston Texans. And if you like them too, you can go to BetDSI.com and place your wagers. When you put down a first deposit, you're going to get 100% bonus on that deposit. So you get 2 times the amount of money to wager with. Plus, using our promo code FANUP10, you're going to get an extra $10 on top of it. You can wager not only on football games, but all sorts of professional sporting events. Obviously, Dancing with the Stars is over. Calvin Johnson placed in third on Dancing with the Stars. I mentioned that in yesterday's show.
Like 3 times.
No, once before the show, once on yesterday's show, and now once on today's show. So you're right, 3 times for third place. Listen, I don't have a lot to work with here, and I'm trying to get through all the shows and through this commercial. For BetDSI.com, use our promo code FANUP10 to get an extra $10. We are to the 4 o'clock games, and we have the Seattle Seahawks visiting the Tampa Bay Bucks. We have the West Coast team going to the East Coast. Tampa's on the East, whatever. I'm not even going to try that geography thing. They're on the west side of Florida, the East Gulf Coast. There we go. But somehow they lucked out and got a 4 o'clock kickoff and not a 1 o'clock kickoff. Not 100% sure how that happened. In any case, I'm at the Seahawks here. I think the Bucks, those plucky Bucks have been doing some good things, but I don't think they're going to be able to beat the Seahawks here, Pat.
No, I don't either. The Seahawks are as complete a football team as there is this year. And, Tampa, like they're mediocre. There's nothing to be ashamed of, but they're not going to beat Seattle.
Monty?
I really, really want to pick the Bucks just as a reward for going into Arrowhead and shocking the world and taking down the Chiefs, but just think that the Seahawks defense is just too good. I will say that if Cam Chancellor does not play, I think that the Bucks will make it a lot closer than people would think just looking at these two teams on paper. But I don't know, the way the Seahawks are playing, it's hard to pick against them.
Seahawks are 5.5-point favorites, James. I should mention CJ Procise is out for this game, and Thomas Rawls is on the injury report listed as questionable. So running back is still a position of question mark for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, Procise, I believe, has a fractured or break in his shoulder or scapula. So he's going to be done for at least 3 weeks. As far as Thomas Rawls, I believe he was slated to come back last week, but they just held him out one additional week. So he should be good to go this week. Otherwise, I mean, you got Russell Wilson playing quarterback. You got him playing wide receiver last week. He does his good running back impersonation every once in a while. Just flying Jimmy Graham up in the backfield, split Russell Wilson to the tight end spot, and yeah, you'll have a functioning offense. I'm gonna take the Seahawks.
interesting to note that the Buccaneers have actually won 3 of the past 4 in this series against the Seahawks. Of course, they lost the last time they played, which was in 2013. So there's your irrelevant stat for this particular game. I'm taking the Seahawks. The next game on the list, we have the Carolina Panthers at the Oakland Raiders. Hey, I've got a Raiders fan on the line, so the floor is yours, Monty.
I think the schedule makers did not do the Raiders any favor. The Carolina Panthers played on Thursday night. They kind of had their mini bye, and the Raiders just played on Monday, so they're kind of coming off of a short week. When this first came out, I definitely thought that the Panthers were going to be able to go in and take the Raiders, but that was back when the Panthers were playing like NFC conference champions. I don't know exactly what happened to their team. I tried to ping Jimmy Six and see if he can kind of break it down, but whatever it is, they lost their mojo. I think the biggest question mark in this game is Luke Kuechly. We've all seen him get carted off the field 1,000 times. I don't know if he's going to be able to play. My guess is that he won't. And at the end of the day, the Raiders are going to need to get their offensive line and their running game back in gear. Romeo Crennel shut him down in Mexico. It might be because the 350-pound offensive linemen just couldn't get their breath and do anything, or it could mean that the Texans' defense is just that good and the only thing slowing them down is their quarterback. I got to pick the Raiders with the way the Raiders are playing. I got into a comment war with Neil, our Redskins superfan, about how good Crabtree has been playing the past couple years. And right on cue, he goes for 3 catches, 3 drops, and 5 yards. So I'm hoping that he comes back and, you know, makes the kind of catches that I'm used to seeing him make. I think the Raiders' rushing attack is kind of the key. The defense has been the worst in the league. Everyone keeps pointing to that, why they're not a true number one seed. But they're playing better. They played really well against Denver. And then they came up big when it counted last week against the Texans. If they can continue to play middle of the pack kind of defense, I think Derek Carr is playing at an MVP level. The fact that the defense has been so bad and he's had to play so well, I think kind of gives him, he's got to be in the conversation. If he's not one of the front runners, he's definitely in the conversation. And I just think that at home, the way the Raiders are playing, they're on a roll. Cam Newton is spending more time looking at his post-game outfit than he is on the post-game game film. That offensive line is letting everyone come through, and just he's taking some serious hits. And I'm hoping that this continues and the Raiders, you know, come back and get another big win just to keep pace with the other teams. I haven't seen anything from the Panthers. I don't know. Kelvin Benjamin kind of fell off the face of the earth. I would expect Jonathan Stewart to get some good run out of the backfield. The Raiders' rush defense isn't that good. And then if you've got Greg Olsen all day long, the Raiders just haven't been able to find a tight end other than when they're in the end zone spiking the ball for the past 2 years. So I don't know what BetDSI has the line at. It'll be a close game, and I think just like the rest of the games this season, the Raiders are going to sneak one. Let's give it to the old crafty Seabass to get a game winner at the end of the game, but in a real tight one.
Monty, you threw so much at me. The Raiders are 3-point favorites, according to BetDSI.com. I was looking at the injury report, and there's not a lot of news yet on Kuechly. He is in the concussion protocol. My guess is he's probably going to clear it based on what I've seen via social media. But, I mean, that would be a guess. That'll be something to watch if Kuechly plays or not. My guess is, again, another guess. The Carolina Panthers are going to keep that close to the vest and probably won't reveal.
The only reason why I think they might be ultra uber conservative with him is because the last time he had a serious concussion, he has like had symptoms for like months afterwards. And since he's the all pro, I mean, this season, whether or not they're willing to admit it, feels like it's kind of a lost cause for them. So if there's any question that he should or should not play, I think they're going to err on the safe side just because of what he went through previously.
Mm. James, what are your thoughts here on this game?
Well, Yeah, I'll kind of echo what Monty said about this being more or less a lost season for the Carolina Panthers, in so much as you go back to when Ron Rivera took over, and you know their seasons have been 6 wins, 7 wins. They had a 12-win season, then another 7-win season, and then last year was 15 wins. So if anything, last year was a big outlier for them. They usually are right around, you know, well, typically around sub 500, but you know, average out to about 9 wins per year. They can still get up to 9 wins per year, which in the NFC South, or in the NFC rather, that might be able to sneak in for a wild card. I see Oakland being able to handle them, even though, you know, Greg Olsen is a slight step up from CJ Fedorowicz, who they had problems covering on Monday night.
Yeah, you know, I talked about this with Tim at the top of the show, and I was trying to give Tim the benefit of the doubt here, but the Carolina's not out of it yet. So you guys talk about a lost season. You know, that division is still very much attainable for the Carolina Panthers. Now, so far this week, I do have Atlanta winning. I have Tampa Bay losing, and I have New Orleans winning. So Carolina will have to win to stay at least within pace of New Orleans and would tie them up with Tampa Bay. And they'd still be 2 games back from Atlanta, but that's not, there's a whole bunch of division games here in the NFC South to finish up the season. So Carolina's got a good chance of getting back into it. Pat, your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Raiders, right? Like, this is kind of their year, and everybody's disappointed by Carolina, with, I think, some very good reasons. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the hot hand.
And I said all of that about Carolina to say that the Raiders are my boyfriends on the side, and I'm taking the Raiders.
You are banging half the NFL, you know.
Well, the team that that I love truly and dearly and will never leave is next on the docket, New England Patriots at the New York Jets. And James, you mentioned thank God for the schedulers and the flex. I also thank it because I hate the primetime games. I just don't like them. So I'm glad now that I don't have
to. We're the Patriots. We play so many primetime games.
Yeah, seriously.
I thought I was on mute.
Seriously, exactly. That's exactly what I'm thinking. But Pat, here we go. The Patriots are at the Jets, and it looks like Fitzpatrick is back at quarterback. I mean, does it matter?
I mean, well, it kind of matters because the Patriots defense, that obnoxious soft zone, like it's the prevent defense for 4 quarters, but we can't actually call it that without upsetting the sensibilities of, you know, our coaching staff. Apparently, that matters, right? When you have a quarterback that can like make legitimate NFL throws, which is what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. Like, is his judgment questionable? Yes. Does it matter when nobody's covered? No. Right. So that's a concern. Decker being done for the year certainly helps the case there, and their defensive backs are just terrible. So I don't think the Patriots have much of a chance of losing. In fact, it's kind of the opposite. It's more of the, we're going to win by 3 or 4 points, and people look at the W's and the, you know, instead of like the point differential, and they'll just say, oh, you know, like Patriots are dominating the league again, and just instill this like false sense of confidence in our team's ability to whip up on anybody, when in fact we're just cleaning up the dregs. So like, yes, the Patriots will win. Like, is it going to be a decisive victory? No, I don't think so.
All right, let's look at that injury report. And I'm going to start with probably the most underrated guy that's on this injury report, Matthew Slater. He's a special teams ace. He's huge on special teams. He's listed as questionable. I have a feeling he's not playing in this game.
Okay. I mean, he's...
Hey, so special teams is part of the game, Patrick. We've been reminded about that ever since it was a huge part of the game against the Eagles last year.
I know. We have like 9 core special teams guys because of it. So I don't want to devalue Slater. He plays extremely well, especially in coverage. But the fact of the matter is you can account for that by kicking the ball out of bounds on punts and kicking it through the uprights on kickoffs. And now you don't need Slater anymore, right? Like not to be too crass about it, but his arguably his best value is wanting kick coverage, followed closely by making sure people are in the right spot and his general presence as a coach on the field. And I think during the week, you still get the latter two, right? So like he's still coaching guys up in theory, even if he's hurt. And then if he can't run down and cover a kick as well, well, okay, but it's not the difference between, you know, pitting somebody on the two and giving up a touchdown. Like I don't think you get that kind of marginal gain from Matthew Slater.
Gronk is most likely out again. He's listed as questionable. I've seen reports saying that he's most likely not going to play. I say that sucks, but we do still have Martellus Bennett. So I'm going to skip over Gronk. Chris Hogan being out, I think, is a big issue in terms of the offense, but we did see Malcolm Mitchell step up last week.
Yeah, Malcolm Mitchell, who really shone in training camp and in the preseason until he had that, you know, really gruesome subluxation of his elbow, which I really wish I didn't see again and again and again. you know, but he seems to have bounced back from that just fine. And, you know, the future is bright on that guy. So I don't think it's the end of the world that Hogan's not playing.
So let's talk about the elephant in the room, or the lack of an elephant. Alan Branch suspended for 4 games for smoking the wacky tobacco.
I'd love to be Matt Forte, like, because Alan Branch, not exactly a household name, but he's arguably been the most consistently positive contributor on a defense that's really underperformed. He hasn't, right? So losing 300 pounds in the middle of your defense, again, we're going to find another fat guy to put in there, probably Valentine. But, you know, having said that, like, I don't know if Valentine can play consistently well, but I do know that about Branch. So it's one more thing to worry about against a team that is probably going to try and run the football a lot. So, you know, advantage Jets there for that matchup.
How much do you think the Jamie Collins trade has affected this defense? Because honestly, we made a bunch of excuses when the Patriots traded him away, but this defense, since that trade, has really shown a ton of weaknesses. Were they always there and we just were ignoring them because of the way that the overall team was playing, or what's going on here?
No, it's a cumulative effect, right? So, and you see this in just everywhere in life where you can make little changes here and there, and individually they might not make that much of a difference, but you reach critical mass with them where all of a sudden it's a big problem. So in the last year, like in the last 12 months, we've cut Dominique Easley. There's a first round pick that's gone from defensive tackle position, right? We shed Chandler Jones. Now we've lost Collins. And that's in addition to like whatever other churn there normally is on the line. I think the only guy that we really lost was that, you know, pass rushing D tackle ended up going to Chicago. But, you know, still, couple that with the age of your core players, right? Now, who do we have left in the front seven that is consistently contributing well? Oh, and I forgot that we're benching Sheard for reasons unknown, right? So where's your consistent, like, responsible veteran presence? We have a couple of outside linebackers, right? That's it. Like, everybody else is new to the team, or they're meant to be rotational depth, and we're missing the meat. Like, we're missing the heart of the order here. And again, you lose one guy, it's not that big a deal. But, you know, roll the clock back a year, this is a much better defense, at least from a talent perspective.
All of this was for me to repeat exactly what happened last week. I'm taking the Patriots. The Patriots, by the way, did not cover the 13 points that I had mentioned last week was going to be the problem in that game. And BetDSI has the line at 8 for the Patriots. I do not believe the Patriots cover the line in this one either. Monty.
Whether or not the Patriots are the best team in the league, or they're just, you know, you guys seem to be a little bit down on them. But whatever it is, the Patriots are the Patriots, and this is a lot of teams' Super Bowl. I think that the Jets have been waiting to get the Patriots at home. I think the Gronk injury is huge. They got to see last week what the game plan might look like without Gronk with Martellus Bennett. And I'm going to take the home team in this one. Surprise, shock the world.
Whoa!
Adam and Eve on the raft, And that's what happens when you start picking with your heart instead of your head.
All right, James, what do you got?
I'll bring a little bit of sensibility back to this and go with the Patriots. Again, I'll echo the the whine of we play too many primetime games with, oh, we didn't cover the spread, but we won this week. Matt Forte should actually have a really good game. I'm looking forward to that in fantasy football, and that's the extent of what I'm looking forward to on this game.
All right, Patrick, I cut you off.
You brought it up in the
response. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in the last 15 years, the Patriots actually cover the spread 55% of the time, which makes them the best team in the NFL for covering the spread. So I guess we shouldn't complain about that either.
All right. The final game on the docket is the Monday night game, the Green Bay Packers at the Philadelphia Eagles. I had teased. We did get an email, and here we go. It's from Josh, who writes in, "The Packers are terrible. If they or whatever garbage NFC North team make the playoffs, it would be a waste of space. They should fire Mike McCarthy, Dom Capers, the defensive coordinator, and the special teams coordinator at the end of the season." Well, usually if you fire the top guy, the rest of them go too. Kyle Shanahan or Marvin Lewis need to be the next head coach. Oh boy, you don't want that. Packers are back to terrible special teams that make Mason Crosby into the best special teams tackler. Seriously, he is now quite good at it. Check the film. Opposing teams should always punt and kick off to us because we refuse to block on those plays. Opposing teams should also never call for a fair catch. Crosby will tackle the returner after a 15 to 30 yard return. Put in all the second stringers in so we don't mess up and win again. Give Ted Thompson the sixth pick in the draft every round. Maybe make some trades to get us more picks in 2017. Avoid injuring the key players for next year's run. Let's see what Ted Thompson can do. A man's emotional state should not be so dependent on how well other men play a kid's game in yellow pants. Right, Neil. Unfortunately, Neil's not here to respond, Josh, but I do think you might be taking it a little bit overboard. That said, the Packers are joining the teams that I have declared done for the season. I'm going to take the Philadelphia Eagles here on Monday night. James.
So I'll take the Eagles as well. Yeah, Mike McCarthy probably does have to go. I will take a little bit of umbrage in what Josh said on terrible special teams. As a team that fumbled yet another kickoff return on Monday night that led to some rather critical points against Monty's Oakland Raiders, I will trade you straight up your special teams coordinator for mine. Maybe a change of scenery will be good for the both of them. All I know is I will be getting the better end of that deal.
Monty, the Eagles do, to be fair, have quite a number of stars on their injury report, including Leotis McKelvin at corner, Darren Sproles at running back, Vitae, the offensive tackle, Connor Barwin at defensive end. So the Eagles are a little banged up going into this one.
They're a little banged up, and they've got a rookie at quarterback. I know he started off pretty hot, but he's definitely come back down to earth. Fire Mike McCarthy. Maybe I'm the resident old-timer on the podcast, but get off my lawn with that stuff. That guy has been one of the best coaches ever since he was with the Packers. They've got a lot of injuries. I think that's a little drastic for Mike McCarthy. And Aaron Rodgers, he's one of the best players to ever do it. So I just have a hard time believing in my heart of hearts that the rookie quarterback, Carson Wentz, is going to lead his team over Aaron Rodgers on Monday Night Football. I'm gonna take the Packers, and that, my friend, is how you lose at Pigskin Pick'em.
I'm the one thing I like to look at in terms of teams, and this isn't the only thing I look at, but I do like to look at the points per game and points allowed per game. The Packers score 24.7 points per game, but the Eagles only allow 18.6. The Eagles score 24.1 points per game. The Packers allow 27.6. That seems to show me that the Eagles offense versus the Green Bay defense should be fine, where the Packers offense, which has been struggling, and I can't believe guys on this podcast last week said that Aaron Rodgers is back to form, is struggling, and they're facing a pretty stout defense. So, Patrick, you are the last word on this game.
So I know I just went on a long tirade about how bad my 8-2 football team is. So like, I'll consider that perspective when I tell this guy to calm down a little bit. Like Green Bay is 4-6. It's not like they're over here, right? Like they're not the Cleveland Browns. They're not San Francisco. I think they're just fine. And they're playing a team that's 5-5, right? So I'm also going to take Philadelphia, but like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on, you know, how bad Green Bay is.
Well, I will say, I think really the concern for this Packers fan is you're looking at either Detroit or Minnesota, whoever won as we are airing this particular show. It will now have at least a they'll still have a 2-game advantage, and the loser will still have a 1-game advantage over Green Bay, yeah. Which makes their season kind of tough to catch up.
Well, I mean, they're not going to win their division, but that's not a reason to burn the house down, right? They're fine. They're not the worst team in their division. They're certainly not the worst team in the NFL. And if they fire their head coach, who are they going to get? They're going to get Kyle Shanahan. And man, that's probably not a good move.
That would be detrimental to their team.
That would be. And he brings up a good point with the yellow pants. I think that's a fixable problem, right? Like they should focus their attention on their wardrobe.
On that note, we still want to hear from you, just like Josh did. Send in your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast and check out our fantasy hot takes at nextfanup.wordpress.com. I hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Hey, on Thanksgiving, while you're giving thanks, we would love to give thanks for you for sharing our podcast with your family. Let them know, hey, this is the show to listen to when you want to know about your team, because we present the view of all 32 from the most important person, that is the fan. So please subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review that helps other people find our show, especially on iTunes, and share with your friends and family, and enjoy that Thanksgiving. Have an extra slice of apple pie for me. I'll be sure to have an extra slice of apple pie for myself. And I'm sure we'll all imbibe in plenty of adult beverages and good stuff. And we'll have recaps ready for you Monday morning. So for James and for Pat and for Monty and for all the super fans, happy Thanksgiving to all, and to all a good night. Here's Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.